Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for February 21st, 2018. On today's show, we're going to be talking about a bunch of news, including directors for James Bond 25, Dungeons & Dragons, and the live-action Pinocchio movie. Netflix acquires more talent. Disney plans reboots of Muppets, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, and a bunch of other classics. Jurassic World 3 gets officially announced, and we will find out what Donald Glover did on Black Panther. This is Slash Film Editor-in-Chief Peter Serretta, and joining me on today's podcast is Weekend Editor Brad Oman.
Hey, that's me.
And Slash Film Writers Hwai Tran Bui.
Hey, everyone.
And Chris Evangelista.
Hello.
Okay, let's start this off. We have a lot of director discussion today on today's podcast. Last night, while I was at my screening of Annihilation, which is awesome, by the way. Chris, you still haven't seen it yet.
I'm seeing it tonight, actually. My screening is tonight.
I'm very interested to hear what you think of this movie. And also, I'm kind of wondering, you've read the whole book series?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, I actually just reread the first book, although I hear the movie isn't literally nothing like the books. I am curious to see how that turns out.
Well, after seeing this movie, number one, I don't think they're ever going to make a sequel, unfortunately. I just don't think general audiences are going to love this movie, but it is great. But number two, I'm very curious how the books deal with, you know, the future storyline of this. But, yeah, I'll be interested to talk to you after you see the movie. But let's just jump into the news. I'm sorry, I got sidetracked there. Last night when I was at my Annihilation screening, news broke out that Danny Boyle is the frontrunner to direct James Bond 25. HT, you were around to write this up. What do we know?
Yeah, so a Variety report revealed that Danny Boyle is the top choice to be the James Bond 25 director. So MGM and Eon are currently eyeing him to direct the next Bond film. And while no formal offer has yet been made, he's reportedly high on their list to helm the movie. Sources also told Variety that White Boy Rick director Jan Demange is also a top choice, but that MGM and Eon are making one last push for a more high-profile director.
Now, I know, on Slash Film, our resident Bond experts are Jacob Hall and Ben Pearson. Neither of them are on this podcast. Who do you think out of this group is the biggest Bond fan?
No, I like the recent Daniel Craig iterations, and I watched, you know, all the Pierce Brosnan ones, but I'll be honest, I have not seen any of the old James Bond movies.
Oh, wow. I would consider them great movies, but you should check at least one of them out.
I've been meaning to just take some time and run through them, you know, spread out over a period of time. Part of it kind of seems daunting, but yeah, I love Skyfall. Skyfall was actually my favorite movie of 2012. So,
yeah, I grew up during the Pierce Brosnan James Bond movies, so they always felt like they never left a big impact on me, and that was always the sort of effect that James Bond movies have had on me. I just kind of see them, and I enjoy them, but then I kind of forget after a while, except for Skyfall, which I really loved, and some of the other Daniel Craig movies. I haven't actually seen Spectre. I missed that one. But yeah, I'm kind of on the same page as Brad. I have seen like bits and pieces of the old Bond films from the 60s and 70s, but because of cable reruns and whatever. But overall, I'm not a huge fan of James Bond.
Yeah, I'm also not a huge fan of James Bond. I've seen some of the older ones. Don't, you know, they're too campy for me. I didn't like Pierce Brosnan. I do like the newer iteration with Daniel Craig. So I guess, you know, we haven't found out what Chris thinks of James Bond. I'm gonna guess that he doesn't like James Bond, but he's seen every single movie.
No, they're fine. They all sort of blend together to me, honestly. I mean, the older ones, they're fine. I mean, Goldfinger is really good. That's probably like the best of the Connery ones. And I loved Casino Royale. I think that's actually one of the best written recent blockbusters in recent memory. So that movie is very good. Skyfall is fine. Spectre was not good. So I don't know. It seems like the newer Bond, the Craig Bonds, they're hit or miss. They make one good one, and then the one they make after it isn't that good, which I guess means this one should be good by default, because Skyfall was good. Spectre wasn't good, which means this one by default should be good. So I guess we'll see.
That is a good theory. So Brad, I take it you're probably the biggest Bond fan out of this bunch. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on Danny Boyle tackling the series.
I guess he could do a decent job. He hasn't really done a movie along, like, as far as action is concerned since 28 Days Later, and I feel like, I don't know, Danny Boyle knows how to direct, obviously, but sometimes I think his style gets in the way of just letting the movie do its thing. Like, there's some choices he made in Steve Jobs that I think
kind of distracting.
Yeah, they're distracting, and it kind of held it back from being as good as, like, The Social Network, which was also scripted by Aaron Sorkin. And so even though I still love Steve Jobs, and I've watched it several times, I just think that sometimes he gets a little bit too bombastic with his style and things that he puts into the movie. That could be good for James Bond, I guess. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it would be interesting to see him do it. I still think Christopher Nolan would direct the hell out of a Bond movie, but as we know, he already said that he's not going to do this next one. So,
Chris, do you have any more faith in Danny Boyle as the Bond director?
I don't know. It's not the most exciting choice, but he might be okay. I liked Steve Jobs a lot too, but I'm not like a huge Danny Boyle fan. Like, I don't like Slumdog Millionaire. I think that's kind of a bad movie, honestly, even though it won Best Picture. Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. I'm a bastard. but he might do okay. I don't know. It's a wait and see sort of thing. I'll wait for the trailer to make up my mind, I guess.
Yes, for sure. We'll keep you updated as we continue to watch, do Bond watch, as we say. But let's move on to our other director news, and that is Disney's live-action Pinocchio movie has found a director. Who is it, Brad?
The director in question is Paul King, who directed both of the Paddington movies, and just recently was hired to write direct the Willy Wonka origin story that's in development at Warner Brothers. So Disney just keeps chugging along, turning their classic animated movies into live-action remakes. Pinocchio seems probably like the least interesting one so far, simply because there have been so many adaptations of this over the years that I'm not sure it's a story that can really be injected with anything new to make it all that interesting. The only time that a recent Pinocchio project had any interest of me whatsoever is when Guillermo del Toro was working on a stop-motion animated version of it, and the character designs just looked incredible. Unfortunately, that's not happening, but Disney's going to try and make Pinocchio work again. I imagine it will be quite different from the original animated movie, because the original animated movie has Pinocchio smoking and getting drunk and gambling on Pleasure Island with some other delinquent boys. And that doesn't really sound like something that Disney is going to be too keen on.
Yeah, what is a live action Pleasure Island even look like under the realms the helm of Disney today?
You know, and I wonder too if I don't know. Because if it's going to be set during, you know, an older period like the original Pinocchio was, I feel like there's only so many things that those characters can do that would be deemed inappropriate and delinquent behavior. And that's why it was smoking and drinking and gambling at the time the original Pinocchio was made in 1940. You know, if it was a modern take, that would be something interesting, I guess. You know, maybe if you had, like, and it sounds ridiculous even just talking about it, just because I think the idea is dumb inherently. But, like, if it was more modern, you would have people, you know, behaving vapidly through social media and, like, addicted to their phones and technology and all that nonsense. And it sounds cliche and trite and, you know, like you would be saying stuff that we already know, almost like a high school, you know, theater production that thinks it's making a big statement. But, I don't know. I'm not really excited about this. The only saving grace is that both of the Paddington movies are absolutely delightful. And so if anybody can turn this something, turn this movie into something that people actually like and fall in love with, it's Paul King. So, you know, maybe I'll change my mind and maybe it'll be a pleasant surprise for me.
I still have not seen either of the Paddington movies, but I've heard they're...
Paddington 2 is so good.
Yeah, I've heard they're...
You should go see it.
I should use my movie pass on that. I'm like the one guy that is like, I need to see Paddington 1 before I see Paddington 2. That sounds so ridiculous.
The original Paddington is on Netflix right now.
I know. But, I mean, one thing Paul King has going for him, he definitely is able to shoot live-action hybrid. You know, obviously Pinocchio is probably going to be some kind of hybrid form of animation or performance capture, you'd think, right? So it seems right down his alley. But let's move on to another director announcement, and that is for the Dungeons & Dragons movie. It has eyed Lego Batman movie director Chris McKay. Tell us about it, HD.
Yeah, so the Dungeons & Dragons movie Chris McKay is reportedly in talks to direct the Dungeons & Dragons movie for Paramount Pictures. So this is a feature film adaptation that has been planned for a while now, and that Paramount is planning for a summer 2021 release date, along with a slew of other feature film adaptations of Hasbro toy lines, including G.I. Joe and other such game adaptations. So this is Chris McKay's next feature film after Lego Batman and also Warner Brothers' Nightwing movie, which he has been developing for a little bit now, but we don't really know much about casting or story or whether that will come before or after the Dungeons & Dragons movie.
Now, has anybody here played Dungeons & Dragons?
Nope.
Okay, some more silence.
I have played a couple times, and it's just not something that I easily got into, which is strange,
because I would think your comedy improv kind of sensibilities, I think, would take that on.
Well, you know, that's the thing. I don't know. It's such a strange disconnect that I have from it, because I'm fascinated by how people play the game in groups, and like the community aspect to it there is, and how they interact, and how like you're supposed to be acting like you are this group on a quest and all that thing. But I just, for whatever reason, even though I love movies and I can easily suspend my disbelief and I can get lost in a story, I cannot bring myself to treat a Dungeons & Dragons quest as a real thing that has stakes. Like, if I would play it and I would just do what I want, I would be the guy fucking everything up, because I wouldn't take it seriously. I don't know. It's hard for me to get invested in it as if, you know, it were a real story that I was existing in. And I don't know why, but I've always had a problem getting into it.
Yeah, I've only played it once. It wasn't my thing. It seems, you know, Dungeons & Dragons universe seems heavily kind of like Tolkien-esque. I'm wondering, what would a Dungeons & Dragons movie bring to the table of fantasy adaptations that other films haven't already done? Like, what is unique about Dungeons & Dragons? Does anybody here have an idea?
I honestly think the most unique thing about it is the sort of choose your own adventure element, which I feel like a feature film adaptation would take away from that aspect. So I don't know. I feel like it would be difficult to make a Dungeons & Dragons movie, just because there's no real story, and that it will just seem kind of like every other fantasy film, like you're saying, Peter. So I don't know. Yeah. But, you know, McKay is really talented. The Lego Batman movie did a great job of balancing the satire and heart of Legos and Batman. So I'm sure he could pull it off, but it's a difficult job just to like build it from the ground up, essentially.
I mean, I feel like if you're doing a Dungeons and Dragons movie, it has to be like Jumanji, where it's people from our world that get sucked into the game. Like, I just don't think if you do it as straight fantasy, like a straight fantasy movie, I just don't think there's a point. Unless what you're saying, like, you know, you do a choose your own adventure kind of thing, which I don't think is possible in the movie theater. Although, did you guys ever, when I was young, when I was in high school, the local movie theater actually had, like, for a time, like, one theater dedicated to kind of these motion, like, movies experiences. And for a time, they actually had, like, some... I want to say like 20, 30 minute movie experiences that you had like this remote in your hand and you chose between two different options. And depending on what all the people in the movie theater chose was what, you know, path you'd take. Did anybody, had anybody experienced that?
No.
More that silent. Sounds
interesting, though. No, silence. But that's really cool. Yeah. I mean, I read Choose Your Own Adventure books. That's the closest experience I have to that.
I know Netflix is working on doing some Choose Your Own Adventure content for the future. We've heard rumors of Black Mirror doing an episode. So, I don't know. Maybe they could do it for Netflix. But this is a feature film. I don't know. But speaking of Netflix, Netflix is continuing to suck up all the talent in the known universe. They have acquired the Duplass brothers for the next four films. Chris, what do we know?
Yeah, so Netflix, they have this never-ending quest to get as much original content as they possibly can. They recently signed deals with Shonda Rhimes, Ryan Murphy, Martin Scorsese has a movie coming out with them sometime soon. And now they've roped in the Duplass brothers, who they traffic in the indie film world. They make mumblecore is the subgenre they're most known for. They've made films like Jeff Who Lives at Home and The Overnight, you know, stuff like that.
So, the Puffy Chair was one of my favorites from them.
Right. Yeah, and, they made that too.
And they're known for making things on a very low budget. They create a outline of some sort, and they get good actors to come in there and actually basically, I don't want to say improv the movie, but there's a lot of creative freedom there because it's such a low budget and such a, you know, low stakes to it.
Right, yeah, they're very character oriented films. They don't really rely a lot on like plot or, you know, big things like that. It's very low key character comedies and dramedies. So yeah, now they've signed a deal for a four picture deal with Netflix, and they have the first film they're going to make is something, it doesn't have a title yet, but it stars Ray Romano, and it's due out sometime this year on Netflix. So yeah, their next four films are going right to Netflix, and so that just seems to be the future of film at this point, where everyone is just signing deals with Netflix.
Yeah, it's strange. I feel like, you know, back in the olden days of Hollywood, you know, directors would have, you know, directors and stars would have these deals with the studios that would basically prohibit them from doing work elsewhere. And I feel like we're kind of going back to that with Netflix. Like everybody's going to be signed up to Netflix, and we're not going to have any talent anywhere else except for Disney, I assume. But let's move on to Disney. And Disney is starting up their own streaming service and have announced, or not announced, but there is rumors that they're going to bring back a bunch of things. Brad, you wrote up a series of articles for the site. Tell us what is in the plans.
Disney's working on a streaming service, which is supposed to launch sometime in the fall of 2019. There's no specific date that it's supposed to start yet, and there's no price point as to how much it's going to cost each month. But Disney's already working on projects specifically for this subscription service. Before, we talked about some of the things that they have in the works, include a new Star Wars series. They're also working on a reboot of Lady and the Tramp. They've got an Anna Kendrick Christmas comedy. The movie Magic Camp's going there. And now one of the new series that they're hoping to start up there is a reboot of The Muppets that will be available exclusively on the streaming service. This comes after The Muppets attempted to reboot back in 2015 with a documentary-style workplace comedy on ABC. And it was not very well received at the time. The ratings didn't do too well. Critically, it was pretty mixed, if not more negative than anything.
Yeah, a lot of longtime fans of The Muppets were upset over the series because it was kind of edgy, and the characters were doing things that probably were out of character for them. The guy that played Kermit for ever since Jim Henson like kind of left the company partially over this, and Frank Oz, one of the original Muppet performers, had been vocal against how horrible it was. So I'm interested to see if this new series for the Disney streaming service will be more in line with the classic Muppets.
Yeah, the show from ABC in 2015 only lasted a season, so that's not coming back anytime soon. And it'll be interesting to see if they can do something that kind of returns the Muppets to their former glory. I feel like every new iteration of the Muppets has never really come close to the original greatness of the Muppet Show and even the movies that were released in the late 70s and 80s. The Muppet Movie, The Great Muppet Caper, and Muppets Take Manhattan are all fantastic. There's definitely children of the 90s that like Muppet Treasure Island and A Muppet Christmas Carol, which I think are fine, but still aren't as good as those original three movies. Personally,
I think Muppets from Space, or wait, Muppets in Space is an underrated Muppets classic.
I wasn't a big fan of Muppets from Space. I just didn't really enjoy it that much. I thought Muppets Tonight, the series that was on ABC in the mid to late 90s, was actually pretty good. But yeah, otherwise, I think the closest we've come to having the greatness of the original Muppets is probably the Muppets Movie that James Bobin directed and Jason Segel co-wrote and starred in. But I just don't know if there's anybody out there who can effectively deliver a Muppet series that is faithful to Jim Henson's original creation and captures the spirit of the Muppets for more than just a hot minute. It seems like everyone who's done Muppets so far, like, they've captured it once, and then, like, can we do it again? And then after the Muppets, you know, we got Muppets Most Wanted, and that was really disappointing. So I don't know. They need somebody to do it. I'm not sure that there's anybody that can do it effectively.
Well, here's my thoughts on this. Is Disney is very protective of their brands. You know, after that great Muppets movie that you're talking about, you know, they made a really poor sequel to that. What was that?
Muppets Most Wanted.
Muppets Most Wanted. Yeah. I would like to see, you know, the puppeteers behind the puppets, have a bigger creative role in this. Jim Henson's son, Brian Henson, does this thing in L.A. every once in a while called Puppets Unleashed, Puppets Unstrung, something like that, where he has a bunch of those guys that, you know, voice and act all the Muppets, and they do these original characters, and it's kind of like an improv show where, like, they're taking suggestions from the crowd and doing things live, and it's kind of R-rated and stuff. I don't expect Disney to do that, but I would love to see a new version of the Muppets Tonight, or, you know, like a variety show where it is live. It's like a Saturday Night Live version of the Muppets, where, you know, obviously it's scripted, but there's the chance of things going wrong, and there's the chance of having, like, those kind of moments that you love from SNL, Brad.
That would be awesome to see, actually. You know, it would be interesting, actually, to see if they could do that and, like, cross it with the idea, because I kind of had this nugget of an idea in the most recent Muppet Show, because it was all about the making of a late night TV show starring Miss Piggy. But if they could do like a Studio 60 kind of show, but they actually do the sketches and they do them live, and it's funny rather than the sketches that were on Studio 60, that would be really interesting. Actually, I'd like to see like almost like a 30 Rock meets the Muppets kind of thing.
Because I will say those Muppeteers are talented as F, because, you know, I've interviewed Kermit and Miss Piggy and all the people on, like, the last two Muppet movies. And when you're asking them off-the-cuff questions, you're getting answers that you would swear are scripted by a team of comedy writers in a comedy, you know, writer's room. Like, they are so on the ball, and I would love to see, you know, them doing that kind of thing. But the Muppets isn't the only thing that they're working out for this new streaming service. There's going to be a line of reboots. What do we know?
Yeah, supposedly Disney is also working on bringing a new line of original films to the streaming service. I mentioned some of them before, but this is the first time we're hearing about three potential reboots that are being eyed. One of them is Honey, I Shrunk the Kids from 1989. Another one is Father of the Bride from 1991, which in itself is a remake of a 1950 movie. And The Parent Trap, which was another remake from 1998, I think, with young Lindsay Lohan, which was also a remake of an older movie as well. So these aren't movies that are moving forward for sure. It doesn't say that they're in active development, but just merely that Disney is looking at them for reboot potential. And they all each have their own possibility. I think, personally, the one that is ripe for a remake and has been for years is Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, simply because the special effects technology we have at our disposal now allows them to do so many new and cool things with the concept of shrinking people and having them stuck in the backyard, if they just choose to go with that story again. The special effects in the original movie actually still hold up pretty well for the most part. So yeah, I don't know. As far as the other two, Father of the Bride and The Parent Trap, not necessarily sure we really need remakes of those. You know, it seems like there's always a Parent Trap wannabe every few years or so. There was the one with the Olsen twins in the 90s. I think It Takes Two, it was called. And, you know, Father of the Bride, I'd be interested in if they brought back Steve Martin and Diane Keaton somehow, but I'm not sure that I'm as invested if it's with an entirely new cast. But that's simply because I love the Father of the Bride remake. It's one of my favorite romantic comedies.
HT, did you grow up with any of these films? What are your thoughts?
I grew up with the Lindsay Lohan Parent Trap movie and also Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. I remember actually one of the first 4D movies I saw, or like where you go in and you get like water splash on you, was Honey, I Shrunk the Audience. So that was a really cool experience for me. But Parent Trap was a movie that I had on VHS. I think I still have it somewhere, actually. And I watched it a million times growing up.
You still have a VHS collection?
Oh, yeah. I haven't thrown away any of my VHSs. I have all my Disney movies on VHS. Actually, I bought one of the last DVD VHS players before they went out of like production. So I still have that, so I can watch my VHS movies and it still like somewhat works.
Okay, I need to do a poll here. Chris, do you own any VHS tapes?
I mean, I probably still have some laying around. I don't own a VHS player, so they're practically worthless, but I do have them somewhere in my house.
Somewhere in your house. Brad, do you have a collection of VHS movies?
I don't have them at my house, but at my parents', we still have my old Disney clamshells and some of the other VHS tapes that I had when I was a kid.
I'm wondering if those Disney clamshells are worth money at this point.
Some of them are, but most of them are just garage sale fodder.
Okay, I'm sorry, HD. I cut you off when you were talking about
Parent Trap.
Parent Trap. Go ahead.
It's okay. Yeah. That was one that I grew up watching a lot and I really loved. I would watch another Parent Trap movie, I guess, even though I think the Lindsay Lohan one was pretty close to perfect. But that's just like my rose-colored glasses seeing it as such. So, yeah, I mean, I guess like they're fine fodder for remakes. I have no sort of protests against it, but they're simple enough stories. They can be remade time and time again, I'm sure.
Here's my problem. I do think Honey, I Shrunk the Kids would be a great remake, especially with today's technology, as Brad mentioned. But they're making these for the streaming service, so they're probably going to have a low budget. I would like to see a Honey, I Shrunk the Kids movie in theaters. I think, you know, if you had the full disposal of, you know, James Cameron's Avatar technology and all that stuff to put you in a world, you know, a micro world like that, why not do it? And why not do it in 3D? And why not do it on the big screen? I don't know.
I don't necessarily think that these movies, we should assume these movies will have low budgets, simply because, I mean, Netflix is spending a lot of money on original movies right now. And so Disney has plenty of money to throw around. And if anything, they might throw a lot of money into these movies because they want to give people something enticing to make sure that they sign up for this subscription series. I feel like, you know, maybe it won't be cheaper than we are anticipating.
You do bring up a good point. Like, I feel like we grew up in an age of, you know, Disney was making direct-to-DVD sequels of their animated classics, and it was always like these, you know, really poorly made, horrible things. And, you know, in the 2000s, we had like all those Bring It On movies, direct-to-DVD. And, you know, usually when stuff is direct-to-DVD or direct-to-TV, you traditionally think of it being kind of like this lower-budget, crappily made affair. But, you know, Netflix is changing those things. You know, obviously Amazon is changing those things as well. So I'm wondering if Disney's attitude towards, you know, a direct-to-VOD project is going to be change. I mean, I guess Magic Camp and some of the other stuff that they were working on was originally going to be theatrical. So So yeah, I think you're probably right, Brad. I think times are changing. Let's move on to Jurassic World 3. Universal has officially announced that it will hit theaters in 2021. Chris, what do we know?
Yes, Jurassic World 3 has a release date now of June 11th, 2021. Colin Trevorrow, who directed the first film and wrote the first and the second film, is coming back to write the script with Emily Carmichael, who had a previous deal with Amblin for a film called Powerhouse that Trevorrow and Steven Spielberg were going to produce. So she has a history working with Trevorrow. And, you know, that's really all we know. You know, obviously Fallen Kingdom, the second film, isn't even out yet, so we don't really know how the story's going to unfold. Colin Trevorrow originally pitched Jurassic World as a trilogy, so this is likely the third and final film in his originally proposed trilogy. And in the past, he has said that the ending of Jurassic World 2, Fallen Kingdom, is going to sort of lead into the third film. So once that film comes out, we'll probably have a better idea of what the third film is going to be. But I have a feeling it'll involve dinosaurs in some way.
I do think it's interesting that he is co-writing this film with Emily Carmichael and not his writing partner, Derek Connolly, which he's written everything from Safety Not Guaranteed to the two Jurassic World films to Book of Everybody Forgets, whatever the name of that was, Book of Henry. And so, yeah, he's giving another writer a chance on this one. And it's also worth mentioning, I know Trevorrow got a lot of criticism when Jurassic World was released, of just of you know, being kind of, he was kind of the picture of the white male that gets, you know, the big project without having to quote unquote work for it, and, you know, female directors getting the shaft and stuff. And he, you know, there was a lot of online discussion. We even posted some stuff on the site. Angie Hahn covered it, like he sent us a letter. But he took a lot of that to heart when he was working on Star Wars Episode 9. He purposely hired his producer was Michelle from Bad Robot. She left J.J. Abrams to produce the film for him, and now she's back at Bad Robot, which is crazy. But it does seem like he's trying to find some female talent in this industry and give them opportunity, which is worth pointing out, I think. Since we don't know much about Jurassic World 3 and we haven't seen Jurassic World 2, I'm not sure if there's any more we could say about this. Brad, HT, do you have any thoughts?
No, I'm pleased that he is giving a boost to more female filmmakers and producers behind the scenes. Yeah, I don't think that it was entirely sort of his fault, I guess, that the discussion around white male directors being propelled up over female directors. But it's good that he's reacting this way, as opposed to, I think he had sort of a knee-jerk reaction to begin with. And this, I think, is a sort of his way as, I don't want to say making amends, but sort of reaching out for that.
And let's move on to our last story, and that is Donald Glover. If you watched Black Panther, and I'm not going to give any spoilers here, but if you watched Black Panther, actually, I guess this is a spoiler. If you get to the end of the credits in the special thanks section, it thanks Donald Glover. So what did Donald Glover have to do with this film, HD?
So Donald Glover and his brother Stephen Glover, who is also an Atlanta writer for the FX show that they work on together, was given special thanks at the end credits of Black Panther. Ryan Coogler recently spoke about how Donald and Stephen Glover gave him notes on a draft for the Black Panther script, and that they came in and read and gave them some cool insight for the movie. So we don't know exactly what that cool insight is, but Donald Glover recently revealed to Entertainment Tonight that he got to take a look at the script, and he added some cool jokes to punch up the movie, he punched up some of the jokes and stuff like that. So he said it was really cool to just get our fingerprints on there for a bit, and that it was a real honor for him because Marvel usually locks things down. So he got a peek at the script before a lot of other people did.
Yeah, and I mean, Marvel does this a lot. They, you know, they brought in Dan Harmon on Doctor Strange to punch up some stuff. Brad, you're a comedy expert. Did you feel any of Donald Glover in Black Panther?
I don't think that I could necessarily specifically pick out any of his jokes that he wrote for the movie or anything like that. Nothing really jumps out to me as something that, oh man, that's totally a Donald Glover joke. But this is
Marvel. I feel like some of the sister stuff, I feel like, could be Donald Glover. That feels so in line with his humor.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe her, like, flipping off Black Panther when he first arrives back at Wakanda could be a Donald Glover joke. I don't know. But Marvel isn't the only one that brings in people like this to punch up scripts. This is actually a common practice, especially with blockbusters and things like that. They bring in comedians specifically to punch up scripts and add jokes where they feel like they need them. So that's definitely a common Hollywood practice, although you won't necessarily always hear about it.
Yeah, usually this stuff isn't reported. Commonly, the people won't even get a credit or even a special thanks credit. So, sometimes, there are many, you know, even Carrie Fisher had done some ghostwriting work on a lot of the scripts that she was part of and stuff that she wasn't part of and didn't get credit until years later in the media. So, yeah, that is common practice. But this brings an end to today's Slash Film Daily. Brad, where can we find more of your work online?
Always on slashfilm.com. I'm writing about the movies and the TV and the toys and the fun. Also on Twitter at Ethan_Anderton. And check out my podcast, Go Flix Yourself, on iTunes and other podcasting shenanigans.
HT, where can we find you?
You can find me writing every day at slashfilm.com. And I'm on Twitter at HTranBui.
Chris, where can we find you?
I'm also at slashfilm.com, and I'm on Twitter at cevangelista413.
You can find me at slashfilm.com. You can find all the stories we talked about today on slashfilm.com and linked in the show notes. This podcast, Slash Film Daily, is published every weekday on iTunes, Google Play, Overcast, all the popular podcast apps. Please go to iTunes, give us a rating, write us a review. That helps us out quite a bit. Spread the word, tell your friends. We'll see you tomorrow.